Namaham Sivamakasaya Shkavatara Shatashvishi Man Eshi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Premshikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhana Ki
Jai
Vrindavan Dham Ki
Jai
Navadvip Dham Ki
Jai
Ganga Maya Ki Jai Jamuna Maya Ki
Jai
Tulsi Devi Ki
Jai
Bhakti Devi Ki
Jai
Samaveda Bhakti Vinda Ki
Jai
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Jai Gaur Premananda Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Gargamuni sent his family priest. Vasudev sent his family priest Gargamuni to perform the name giving ceremony. His son. When Nanda Maharaj came to Mathura to pay the taxes, Vasudev was inquiring about his son Balaram and Nanda's son Krishna in such a way as to ascertain whether Vasudeva was aware, whether Nanda was aware that Krishna was actually Vasudeva's son. And in the dialogue, Vasudeva detected that Nanda had no knowledge that Krishna was Vasudeva's son. And Vasudeva was relieved at this, fearing that if the Brijavasis knew that Krishna was actually the son of Vasudeva, and Kamsa would extend his efforts to kill the child. So he was relieved at that. Nevertheless, at the end of their very friendly, warm meeting, in which great heartfelt affection for each other was expressed, devotion to Krishna and consequent love and affection for one another, Vasudeva advised Nanda Maharaj, you better return quickly to Braj. There could be some calamities. And on the way back, Nanda Maharaj was thinking, what did he mean by that? Certainly his words are true, and I must be very diligent. And then as he was returning back, he smelled this very sweet aroma, which was the burning body of Bhutana, which demonstrates a wonderful point that however ugly or grotesque, ghastly something may be, like my own heart,
when it's touched by Krishna, it becomes sweet and pure and fragrant. Because Krishna means all attractive, and his effect makes everything else all attractive. His purifying influence draws out the undesirable, ghastly, ugly anartas and aparan, and leaves the pure soul, who in the case of Putana was elevated to the position of nursemaid to Mother Yashoda. Because Krishna took that little bit of good. She approached me as a mother. And he extricated all the evil motives and intentions behind that disguise. So, further being relieved that the Brijabasis didn't know that Krishna was Vasudeva's son. Vasudeva sent his family priest, Bhargamuni, to perform the name-giving ceremony. Nevertheless, Nanda Maharaj was uneasy about this, as was Vasudeva, that if we perform this purificatory rite publicly, Kamsa may come to know of it, and he'll be suspicious. Why is Gargamuni, the priest of the Jadu dynasty, performing this ceremony for the son of Nanda Maharaj? So he said, this is very hazardous. Nanda said, we can do it in the cowshed, secretly. So, in that meeting, Gargamuni said, your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in Shyam complexion. Because your son appeared as the son of Vasudeva, he's sometimes called Vasudeva. So here, Vasudeva actually revealed the truth that Krishna's the son of Vasudeva. But is Krishna the son of Vasudeva? Vasudeva Devaki, as we discussed briefly last night, but didn't go into much depth, were previously Krishna and Sutapa, who had a desire for the Lord to be their son, for which purpose they performed severe tapasya for 12,000 celestial years, which is such a vast duration of time. One day on this planet being, or one day in the heavenly planets being 6 months on Earth. Because they were sadhana siddhas. The question came up in Chaitanya Charitamrita, well, if Vasudeva and Devaki performed that much tapasya to have a plenary portion of Krishna as their son, what did Nanda Yashoda do? And the answer is they didn't do anything. They're eternally the father or mother of Vrajendanandana Krishna. But Vasudeva Devaki, being the amsas of Nanda Yashoda, whereas Nanda Yashoda Nitya Siddhas, Vasudeva Devaki are, they're amsas, who are half Aishwarya and half Madhurya in their love for Krishna. And acting as sadhana siddhas, they had to perform this tapasya. And when the Lord appeared and asked them what is the object of their penance, they said, we want a son like you. He said, there's no one like me. So I'll have to become your son. Not once, not twice, but three times. So then as Kashyapa and Aditi, they gave birth to Vamana. As Vasudeva and Devaki, they gave birth to Krishna. And he revealed himself first, hovering above the ground in his forearm form, holding conch club, disc lotus, and wearing crown helmet. His Aishwarya feature. Just to testify to them that, yes, I, the Lord, have come. And then out of fear of Kamsa, he said, please hide yourself. So he became a little baby. Sanatana Goswami reveals an interesting fact later in Bhagavatam, which occurred at this time. Then when Krishna told Vasudeva to take him across Jamuna, Mother Devaki was thinking, such a long journey, he'll get hungry. So she breastfed him just for an instant before. So, you know, after 12,000 celestial years of intense tapasya, the Lord finally appears. And, you know, as Vishnu, looking down upon them with great feeling for all they've been through, having seen their six sons slaughtered brutally before their very eyes. Can you imagine? Not once or twice, but six times, Devaki's newborn son, shining effulgently, smashed, pulverized on the rocks before her very eyes by her own brother. How incredibly traumatic. I can't imagine. So the Lord was looking down at them with great feeling and empathy for all the ordeal they'd been through. And then he tells Vasudeva, take me to Nanda's house. After appearing after millenniums of tapasya and sadhana and discipline and prayer, the first thing he does is he leaves them. So, we discussed last night, it could go a little bit deeper because I was not seeing so many Americans in the audience. I was afraid to delve too deeply into the wonders of Krishna Leela. But since whatever Americans are present today are dedicated to Krishna consciousness and Srila Prabhupada's mission, we can appreciate a little more deeply the six sons, what they represent, what Kamsa. Not to get too much into symbology, because Srila Prabhupada really de-emphasized symbology in the early days, because the hippies he was preaching to were too likely to take Krishna Leela as symbolic. Krishna Leela is not symbolic, it's absolute truth. But absolute truth is the source of symbology. You know, people who don't have Krishna consciousness, they utilize symbology to try to make some sense out of existence. And it comes through in mythology and religion and folklore and so many ways. Visions, images, dreams. But the source, the pure, perfect source of all symbology is Krishna Leela. It's not symbolic, it's absolute. But the absolute contains symbology. And the scriptures are full of symbology. And it's important because that is a language that speaks to all souls at all times, from all races and all ethnic origins and all religions, on whatever level of spiritual advancement they may be. And even our acharyas, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, heavily expressed the symbolic aspect of Krishna's Leela. So if we're rooted firmly in Srila Prabhupada's emphasis that Krishna Leela is not symbolic, it's absolute truth, and that absolute truth is rich in symbology, then we can appreciate the symbology without the potential hazards it might cause in our minimizing the absolute nature of Krishna's appearance and Leela. So, Sri Araswami explains that the six sons are the categorical archetypes Kam, Krodh, Lobha, Moha, Mada, Matsarya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur looks at it from another dimension. The six sons of Devaki are the objects of the senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and thought, because the mind is the sixth sense. And it's very important to understand Krishna Leela in terms of our own sadhana, or you could say it the other way, our own sadhana in terms of Krishna Leela. Because Krishna consciousness means we're preparing for the appearance of Krishna in our hearts. And this is the microcosm of the macrocosmic historic, not exactly historic event, an absolute truth manifesting within the realm of historic context. They're related. And the more we understand the relation of how Krishna appears, how he kills the demons, has a counterpart within our own hearts. He kills the anarthas as he's preparing to take birth in our infant Krishna consciousness. And as it grows and becomes stronger, he will continue empowering us to overcome obstacles on the path to bhakti. So, the six sons, of course, historically, they were originally the sons of Marichi, the collective mind of the universe. They committed an offense when they laughed at Lord Rama. Even though what he was doing was wrong, it was a serious breach of etiquette to laugh disrespectfully. Because Brahma was being used by Krishna to demonstrate a lesson, and however powerful, exalted, and devotional one may be as Brahma, the objects of the senses are so powerful. Without Krishna's protection and empowerment, we cannot control ourselves. So Krishna was using Brahma to demonstrate that point for the benefit of all of us. And the six sons of Marichi laughed at Brahma, for which they were cursed by the sages. To take birth as the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu. And in that birth, they followed in the footsteps of their grandfather by taking shelter of Brahma, seeking immortality. And when their father, Kalanimi, heard of this, and their grandfather, Hiranyakashipu, he was enraged. I am controlling everyone in the universe, Hiranyakashipu said, and you, my six grandsons, are going to my servants for shelter. This is offensive to the head of the demons. Therefore, I curse you. In your next birth, you will be killed by your own father. So the next birth, they were born of Devaki to be killed by Kamsa. So understand the context in terms of sadhana. As we practice sadhana, our senses become purified. And as our consciousness is uplifted from the dull darkness of ignorance into the bewildering fires and passions of Dhammaguna, and proceeds into the tranquil, clear perception of Satguna with the deeper sense of happiness and satisfaction inherent to that mode, there's actually a great danger that the material world may appear more alluring than before. With refined sense perception, we can we can detect these subtle embellishments and refined aspects of the wonders of material nature. And that may lure us into the misconception that now, as we're advancing, we can enjoy more than before to protect us from this misconception which could deviate us from the path of bhakti. Krishna arranges for the rise of another element into the position of power. In the realm of bhakti, his name is Kamsa. Very interesting how Ugrasena, who was cousin to Parjanya Maharaj, Ugrasena was born of Kshatriya mother, so he was given rule over Mathura. Parjanya Maharaj was born of a Vaishya mother, so he was given rule over the Vaishya community of Braj. Ugrasena had such a saintly son, Asurasena, whereas Parjanya Maharaj had, you know, the five sons headed by Upananda. In the middle was Nanda Maharaj. Pure devotees of the highest caliber. How would Ugrasena have such a hideous demoniac rakshasa leader for a son? You know the story? Ugrasena's wife was very beautiful and young. And one spring morning she was playing in the garden. And this Asura flying over in his airplane was captivated by her beauty, and he made a landing. And the rakshasas are very expert in deception. He assumed a form that looked so much like Ugrasena that when he approached the girl in the garden, she was thinking, oh, my husband has come. And she surrendered to his will. Later found out it was not her husband, and as a result, Kamsa was born. Kamsa represents fear. His very name struck fear in the hearts of the demigods. Kamsa was also very fearful. He was very insecure. And therefore, he married the two daughters of Jarasandha to have powerful military might to protect him in his ambitions and support him. Then he only had one fear left. This Vasudeva is such an influential political figure that if anybody could lead an uprising against me, it would be him. So Kamsa was instrumental in the marriage of Vasudeva to his cousin's sister, Devaki. And he showed his support and encouragement by driving the chariot, thinking that if Vasudeva marries my sister, then everyone will support me. I'll have the support of Jarasandha and his vast armies. I'll have the support of Vasudeva, who's so influential in Mathura. But then when he heard the voice from the sky, when he's acting as such a gentleman with such affection for his sister, in an instant he's ready to behead her. And Vasudeva is pleading, it doesn't look very good for your character if you behead your sister at the time of her marriage in a public procession. And still he couldn't alter his motive and incentive and plan. So then he had to make the arrangement that I'll hand over all my children. So Kamsa represents fear in the kingdom of Mathura. And he's a crucial personality in the kingdom of our hearts. Because if we think that, oh, mode of goodness, peaceful, happiness, senses are purified, they can perceive to much deeper, richer extent the subtle refinements and wonders of material nature, we might become distracted from the path. And therefore Kamsa arises to power, so that we understand the actual unmasked hideous nature of material existence. It's fearful to the soul because it tries to take us away from Krishna. And with that understanding, personified by Kamsa, what do we do with our purified senses? Apply them more feelingly in the service of the Lord, for the pleasure of the Lord. So, in the service of the Lord, the senses become purified even beyond the level of Satyagun and attain the stage of Shuddhasattva. And on that stage, we can actually perceive what the material senses cannot apprehend, which is the transcendental nature of the Lord's birth, pastimes, and message, which, according to the Lord's own promise in Bhagavad Gita, awards that we never have to take birth again. If we understand the divine nature of his appearance, pastimes, and teachings, we never have to take a birth again in this material world. But this does not mean some theoretical or philosophical understanding. It means realization within the heart, which takes humility. For the philosophical understanding to be assimilated by the soul. Otherwise, it just remains theoretical. If we do not go through Mahaprabhu's teachings, which emphasize Trinadapi Sunichena, Tororapi Sahishnana, Kamanita Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadari. So, as Srila Prabhupada read the words of his Gurudev on that record album, following Srila Prabhupada singing with such devotion and feeling Brahma Samhita, and then he began to speak, the materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat who is forever inviting all conditioned souls to associate with him eternally in loving service mood. The transcendental autocrat, the supreme being who possesses by his inherent right all powers. And what is he doing? He's crawling on the ground following the ankle bells of some Samadhi who he thinks is his mother. And when he sees that that's not my mata, he scampers back in fear, looking for the shelter of Mother Jashoda. In this way, the transcendental autocrat is forever inviting us. When he's a little older, and as game, he and Balaram would grab the tails of the calves, who would become frightened and run, and they would slide through the manure of Braj. And that manure of the Chintamani cows mixed with the dust of Chintamani would make them very beautiful and very happy. And the gopis and gopas watched in wonder as the transcendental autocrat, who possesses all powers by his inherent right, attracting and inviting us to associate with him. course, when they got a little older, Krishna became very uncontrolled in his passions to steal butter. And whenever he got caught, and the householder would say, "You were a thief," Krishna would say, "I'm not a thief, you're a thief." And you get angry. You transcendental autocrat. And then, of course, as he grew up, he's stealing everything. Mm-hmm. Stealing the innocent protection of the gopis, stealing the minds of his devotees, stealing away all their sinful reactions, all their miseries. He's a thief. The transcendental autocrat. So, anyway, after the six sons of Devaki are kicked out, Balaram appears. It's by Balaram's influence, because Balaram is the original guru. By his influence, Anartas are removed. So when they are removed by his influence, then he himself appears in the heart of Devaki. And after performing his service of manifesting the Dhamma with all paraphernalia for the pleasure and service of Krishna, he's transferred to Gokul. So when Rohini suddenly became pregnant, she herself was shocked because her husband was in prison in Mathura. She was smuggled out to Braj. And then how did she become pregnant? She didn't know herself. Nanda Maharaj, this priest, he explained the situation. That Devaki's embryo was transferred. And everyone accepted that. But they kept it confidential that it didn't get back to Mathura and reach the ears of Kamsa. So, then we were discussing a little last night, superficially. Maybe appreciate a little bit more today how when Nanda was married to Yashoda, the Brijavasis were so elated. But actually, Upananda was the eldest of the sons of Arjanya Maharaj, so he was to be the king. But Upananda called an assembly. He was usually the one who would call assemblies. And he explained that, you know, my younger brother, Nanda, is so much more qualified than I. So I recommend that he be the king. And appropriate to my name, Upa, which means secondary, I will be the secondary Nanda. I'll be like an advisor. I'll be his servant. And in Braj, everyone is so free of envy and ego that they just happily accepted the younger brother, Nanda, to be their king. And then he was married to a beautiful daughter of a neighboring village, and the Brijavasis were so elated, and the land was flourishing with butter and yogurt and just all gifts of bounty. But as time went on, year after year and decade after decade, Nanda and Yashoda had no offspring. And all of Nanda's brothers had only daughters. So as time went on, the Brijavasis were feeling a little disheartened. What to speak of Nanda? They're all into his old age, and I can just, you in their 70s, they had no child. And what's the hope of having a baby when you're in your 70s? So it was like a dark cloud of gloom that was hovering over the ecstatic Vrijavasis, that there's this one deficiency. But Nanda never gave up hope. Nanda means joy, the joy of devotional service. He was so exclusively Narayana Parayana, sold out to the will of the Lord. That's why he never performed any yagyas or anything, have a child. He was just dependent on the will of the Lord. And then, when he confided in Mother Jashoda that, you know, I had this desire for a son, but I feel deeply and I see clearly we do have a son playing in the courtyard, climbing in your lap, sucking your breast. It's like a dream, but it's when I'm awake. I see these things. I experience and feel this reality. I've been praying for Lord Narayan for his son, but I see and feel we do have a son who is even more beautiful than Lord Narayan. How can this be? Who can this be? And Mother Jashoda said, my dear, I was reluctant to tell you, but I have the same experience. So they're eternally the father and mother of Krishna. But in the spiritual world, there's no Janmashtami as we know it here. There's no birth of Lord Krishna. He's eternally present there. The material world is very wonderful because it acts as a mirror to reflect back to the spiritual world certain pastimes that cannot take place there, like the birth of Lord Krishna. And then when those Nityasiddhas come to this world, they have this sense that we don't have a child. But in another dimension, they feel that we do have a child, because there's many dimensions of absolute reality interplaying in the wonderful patterns of rasa, which permeate Braj. So then they concluded we should, you know, perform this Dwadasi Vrata. After which, when Jashoda was massaging the lotus feet of Nanda Maharaj and she fell into a slumber, she saw in a dream that in his meditation, the Lord had appeared and descended into his heart, from where he was transferred to her heart. The more he was transferred to her womb. And when she woke up, she woke her husband and said, I had the same dream. And just then, her belly began to grow and her breast began to swell. And everyone saw that Nandarani is with child. And that dark cloud of gloom just dispelled. But when it was time for her to give birth, and she had her own separate room, the maternity ward, with a nurse to care for her, the nurse was gone on the night of the delivery, not understanding that that was the time. Of course, it was all under the arrangement of Yoga Maya for Vasudev to bring his child over and Jashoda to be just oblivious from the ordeal of having to deliver not one, but two children by herself, Krishna and Subhadra. So she was just delirious. When the nurse came in the morning, of course it was when Vasudev came that, you know, he exchanged. And his child, Vasudev Krishna, merged into Nanda's son. And he took the girl, who was raised by Kamsa to be slaughtered like the others, but she flew into the sky and revealed her eight-arm form and told him, you can't kill me. The child prophesied to kill you is already born. just ahead of me, somewhere else. Now stop these atrocities to your poor sister and brother-in-law. And she disappeared. So, you can wonder, you know, why such a gentleman as Vasudeva would exchange his son with his cousin, the daughter, to be slaughtered. But this is all under the arrangement of Yogamaya. By that influence, Jashoda's nurse was not around on the night she delivered, and then when, you know, the nurse came in, Nandarani, Nandarani, you have a child! And she woke up and found the baby boy. I didn't realize that she also gave birth to a girl. Today is Subhadra's birthday. I mean, if last night was Janmashtami, the following day is the birthday of Subhadra and Srila Prabhupada, which, because it was the next day that the good news was broadcast throughout the land, and Nanda had a baby son, and Srila Prabhupada appeared on that day to broadcast that message worldwide. So, yeah, so anyway, Krishna's various pastimes in Braj, his killing of the demons demonstrates how he kills the Anarthas in her heart, beginning with Putana, who is pseudo-guru, meaning one who teaches material advancement, karma, and again, in the name of spiritual life. That's an anartha. And Krishna has to kill that obstacle to his infant pastimes in our hearts. And then, actually, all these demons have their, you know, more obvious and their subtler significance. Putana also means a guru who is qualified, but who doesn't consider the qualification of the disciple and gives initiation without considering whether the disciple is qualified. And that is damaging to the disciple's heart, the disciple's spiritual life. Specifically means one who approaches a guru for Siddha Pranali, and the guru gives the Siddha Pranali without considering if anyone in this world is competent to receive that type of initiation in this age. Because if you find out that you're a 13-year-old unmarried gopi, you have to maintain that identity and function for the rest of your life, and that might be very awkward in this world. And it might just destroy your spiritual life. So that's Putana in her subtler form. And Krishna has to destroy all these things. If you want to know your Siddha Pranali mantra, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati has given it. It is Trinada Pisa Nichena, Tadora Pisa Hishnana, Amanida Manadena, Kirtaniya Siddhari. So, as Krishna grows, he's manifesting his pastimes of killing the demons that follow Putana with the growing Krishna consciousness within our hearts. And Balaram kills some of them. And Shiva Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the demons killed by Balaram represent the anarthas where there's more emphasis on our own endeavor to overcome them. Now, any devotee is going to say, well, what endeavor of my own can overcome these anarthas? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur further explains that when our desire is very strong and determined and devotional and humble, then Krishna will appear in our, Balaram will appear in our hearts to kill such demons as Dinavishura and Palamba. And understand, these anarthas, they present themselves oftentimes as your dear most friend and well-wisher, as did Palamba. He knew what cowherd boy could not come out and play that day. Nobody else knew. Palamba knew. And he assumed a form exactly resembling, in every aspect of physical appearance and behavior and emotional constitution, that very cowherd boy. And nobody knew this is a demon, except Krishna and Balaram. So they're playing their games, you know, thieves and cops and robbers, and, you know, all the different games. And whoever lost had to carry his victor on his shoulders. So Krishna lost. And he had to carry Sridharma on his shoulders. This is a wonder that, you know, Kunti Devi, Bhishma, Kolavet Sridhar are pondering in great relish how Krishna was defeated playing cops and robbers. They have to carry, he who carries all of creation within his heart had to carry Sridharma on his shoulders. And Balaram, who won, he had two main teams, Krishna and Balaram won, so he got to go for a ride on the shoulders of Palamba. And then Palamba just took off into the forest. And Balaram was thinking, that's not part of the game. He's taking me away from my friends. That's not how the game works. And then he rose into the sky and assumed his horrible, hideous Rakshasa form. And Balaram got scared. This is a demon. Maybe there's another one back there trying to kill Krishna. So I better not stay scared. I better do something. So with his fist, he smashed him in the head, brought him down, ran back to make sure Krishna was all right. So Palamba is the thief in disguise who really strives to steal yourself away from yourself, which means Mayavad. Which doesn't just mean that I'm God, you're God, we're all God, we just forgot it, we have to remember, and we become God again. That's pretty hard to fall for, but there are very, very, very subtle, deceptive refinements of the Mayavad that infiltrate even into Vaishnava camps. But this subtle form of Mayavad, this Palamba, presents itself as your best friend by speaking the same words as does your guru. And you look and say, oh, this is the same words as my guru speaks. And then you put your faith in that person. You don't know their heart. So when you surrender to one who has Palamba in his heart, the infant Krishna in your consciousness is jeopardized. And you can't tell. The subtle refinements of Mayavad, because it cloaks itself behind the Vaishnava words and the Vaishnava gestures and the Vaishnava etiquette and the Vaishnava worship. Everything is Vaishnava except for one very subtle element deep within the heart. Therefore, we must take shelter of a deep humility which attracts Balaram to come and protect us from being or having our Krishna consciousness killed by that Mayavad. And after all the obstacles to Braj are eliminated, then Akura comes to take Krishna Balaram to Mathura, and when they stop to bathe in Jamuna, and Akura sees in the Jamuna Krishna and Balaram, and he goes, no, they're on the chariot. And he looks back in the Jamuna, he sees Shesh with Vishnu lying on his coils like a couch. And he goes back to the chariot looking very bewildered, and Krishna says, did you see something wonderful? After seeing you, what is wonderful? And he takes them to Mathura. And after killing Chandra and Mushtika, and then, you know, just jumping up onto the dais, grabbing Kamsa by the hair, you rascal, you killed all my brothers, you imprisoned my mother and father, and I've had it with you. And he killed him. And everybody knew that nobody in this world could kill Kamsa. So after killing him, and dragging him around to make it sure, real clear, he's dead and gone, Krishna and Balaram ran up to Vasudeva Devaki. They wanted to get hugged, but they didn't get any hugs. Because Vasudeva Devaki, seeing Krishna kill Kamsa, understood he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because of that reverence, due to their Aishwarya nature, they could not embrace him. And Krishna Balaram just stood there. You mean after 11 years? You know, you never even met Balaram. And you just met me one brief night. And you're just standing there like this? And they just stood there like this. Because their parental affection was so distanced by this display of the mighty opulence and power of the Supreme Transcendental Autocrat. It just froze them in reverence. And Krishna and Balaram were really hurt that after all these years, you're not even going to give us a hug. And they started to cry. And those tears trickling down the cheeks of their sons flooded that Aishwarya in a flow of Madhurya. And then when Balaram fell at the feet of Vasudeva, he picked him up and embraced him, which is just what he wanted, and smelled his head in great familial love. And Vasudeva picked up Krishna and covered his head with his sari and began to feed him after 11 years. And in that exchange, everyone's heartfelt desires was almost completely fulfilled, but Devaki still had some feeling of uneasiness in her heart. She was not still completely satisfied, even with realizing, you know, reunion with her son. What's the matter? And she said, Krishna, when you went to Gurukul, you brought back the dead son of your teacher. Could you bring back my six sons? And Krishna went to Balaram and said, let's go. And they went, got the sons, brought them back, still little babies, handed the Devaki, and in motherly affection, she breastfed them all, and immediately upon tasting that breast milk of Mother Devaki, because of the one time it had been taken by Krishna before his sojourn to Gokul, it was Mahaprasad. And immediately tasting that Mahaprasad, they were liberated. They went back to their original positions. And Devaki was just lost in wonder. So, Shukadeva Goswami begins the 10th canto by telling Maharaj Pariksit that the pastimes and instructions of Krishna are like a boat. And what is the symbology of a boat? That's your means for crossing over. And the ocean symbolizes a very vast expanse that you can't cross on your own, and it is filled with all kinds of wonders and all kinds of dangers. So the standard Vedic analogy is, you know, the human body is like a boat. Spiritual masters, the helmsmen, the Vedic hymns, and the favorable breezes, which are. But in 10th canto, Shukadeva Goswami is giving a different version, that the boat is Krishna's instructions and pastimes. He said, by that boat, your grandfathers were able to cross over that vast ocean called Kurukshetra, filled with, you know, such entities as Timangila, who could have easily swallowed them. They were so heavily overpowered by the Kaurava's might, including Bhishma, you know, Dronacharya. It was Krishna's instructions. Following, surrendering to Krishna's instructions that awarded the empowerment to cross over that very dangerous field like the ocean. So Krishna imparted instructions to all of us in the midst of that ocean, Kurukshetra, in the Bhagavad Gita. And Arjuna remembered those instructions. But he didn't take them to heart so deeply and so feelingly and so fervently until Krishna's pastimes progressed toward their termination. And when the disaster, apparent disaster, occurred at Prabhash, and Krishna sent Daruka. And after Daruka saw all Krishna's weapons appear before him, and then with his horses and chariots all ascend to the sky. What does this mean for Daruka? Krishna's chariot driver. When the chariot and horses ascended to Vaikuntha, Daruka saw that, what's my service to me? And Krishna told him, go back to Dwarka. And he returned, just blinded by tears. And in Dwarka, he had a very important function, because Arjuna, hearing that the Jadu dynasty and Balaram and Krishna have left this world, his continual impulse was to commit suicide. And Daruka had to keep reminding him, no, you have an instruction from Krishna, a mission, to take the queens to Indraprastha. Daruka had to keep reminding him, and Arjuna fixed his mind. And they brought the queens over to the mainland. And just then, ominous dark clouds crisscrossed with lightning, making thunder which just shook the earth, as if the earth was trying to cast off one last burden. It wasn't the burden of the demons who she had called Krishna to come and kill. It was another burden. It was a loving burden. It was the burden of the Jadus. So, when the earth began to tremor, and the lightning was striking Dwarka, and the waves were surging, and the rain was pouring, and as the queens and the whatever Jadus were left turned to look back one last time at their residence, he saw Dwarka slip down beneath the city, and under the roaring, boiling waters which covered over Dwarka, which they could barely see between their own tears and the rainfall, they had to bid farewell to their abode as Krishna I mean, as Arjuna led the caravan on this last trek from Dwarka to Indraprastha. And on the way, what Srila Prabhupada explains as a group of infidel cowherd men arrested Arjuna, took the queens into their custody, and as they herded those queens off, as they were screaming and calling out to Arjuna for protection, he took his Gandiva bow, but he did not even have the strength to string it. He called for his weapons, but they didn't answer and come. He tried to call out his divine incantations. He couldn't remember the mantras. And as the queens were screaming and the cowherd men were mocking him, he was defeated by a group of cowherd men. And when he reached Indraprastha, the news had already been broadcast over the universe. Arjuna has been defeated by a band of cowherd men. And feeling himself completely stripped of every last thread of self-dignity, he understood. Krishna bestowed that empowerment for a particular function and purpose. Now he's withdrawn it because he has another purpose for me. And he told his brothers, let's go. And without second thought, they went. And Subhadra and Draupadi, in their own way, followed in spirit their husbands as the Pandavas ascended higher and higher into the Himalayas, following the footsteps of their forefathers. And as the air became so thin and the vegetation so sparse, there's no question of maintaining material life here. And there's no question of turning back. Arjuna, who had been contemplating more and more during this series of the final pastimes, Krishna's instruction, I am not manifest to the foolish and intelligent. To them, I'm covered by that curtain of Yoga Maya. And then Arjuna's resolve was, I must get through that curtain. And then as they ascended,